Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:08 British Summer Time. Today is September 30th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. This is also the end of the month and the end of the quarter, so perhaps we'll take a somewhat longer-term view. There has been a great deal of short-termism in a quarter which has been characterized, but probably by one word, and that is volatile. When JP Morgan said that markets fluctuate, he wasn't kidding. This has been a tumultuous couple of months, and the root causes of that tumult are still very much in evidence. What I'd like to do today is to take just a quick review of what's been happening in here this week, and then go through the various different regions, as in Europe, North America, and Asia, in order to so that we can cover as many topics as possible. This week, gold bounced back from the $1,550 level. It's finishing out the week at 1,626. It was as high as 1,640 earlier on today. In the precious metal markets, generally, silver is down to $30. It's been lower than that during the week, but not by very much. While gold pulled back and found support in the region of the 200-day moving average, silver, platinum, and palladium have fallen a bit more. Both silver and palladium are below their 200-day moving averages. Platinum is finishing out the week in the region of $1,523. It's down 9 on the day. US Treasuries, having soared 2 weeks ago, pulled back from that peak, have steadied around the 142-143 area. The progression of higher reaction lows is still in evidence. They would really need to be taken out. A sustained move at least below 140 on the 30-year Treasury would be required to indicate that supply is coming into dominance beyond the very short term. In the stock markets, it has been up 1 week and down the next for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Last week was a powerful up week, and this week was somewhat weaker. The Nasdaq 100 is finishing out the week in the region of 2,159. Earlier this week, it was closer to 2,300. And it posted a downward dynamic yesterday. Now, what is individual about the Nasdaq 100 is that it is one of only a handful of indices that managed to push back up into the overhead trading range following the breakdowns that were pretty ubiquitous across equity markets in late July and early August. Since that August 8th or August 9th low on the Nasdaq 100, it's posted a progression of higher reaction lows. It's fallen this week to test the last of those higher reaction lows. It really does need to rally from this area in order to maintain the very short-term bullish outlook for that index. In each of the previous higher reaction lows that it's posted over the last almost 2 months, each successive higher reaction low has been higher than the last. So this is the first retest of a higher reaction low. It really does need to rally from this area. If it doesn't, then the chances are that this is still a distribution below a Type 3 top. That type of trading activity is evident right across a whole slew of markets. This week in Europe, the majority of markets rallied rather well, and they finished out the week down a bit. The Nasdaq was down almost 2.5%, the FTSE 100 down 1.3%. The FTSE has been relatively steady over the last month. It's been ranging, but below that Type 3 top that has been evident for the last 2 months. The DAX has had much more of a downward bias, and it still has that progression of lower rally highs. So it really does need to sustain a move well above the 5,700-5,800 level to really start to indicate that demand is beginning to get the upper hand in here. It has a falling wedge type characteristic. What that means is that it has lost downward momentum. It's beginning to post failed downside breaks, but there's still a progression of lower rally highs. It suggests that demand is coming back slowly but surely. There are people attempting to buy the dips, but that there is still overhead supply pushing down on the lower rally highs. People who are short in this type of market will generally have a stop above the most recent rally peak. If you start to break the progression of lower rally highs, then it starts to pressure some of the short positions. It can initiate a short covering rally, and you often get a rally that is faster and sharper than one would be accustomed to in the course of what has been a very abrupt decline. So that's what those are the conditions that we would associate with a type 2 bottom. The DAX may be forming a type 2 bottom, but until we have evidence that it's breaking its progression of lower rally highs, then that is still very much a hypothetical situation. This was a good week for the European banking sector. And the European banks have been particularly weak, but this week they rallied rather well. They pushed back above 100, then they pushed back above 105 the same day. That broke the progression of lower rally highs. That could suggest that we're into base formation development type territory. So those European banks have been a lead indicator for Europe, really. They've been underperforming for a considerable amount of time. The fact that they are beginning to show signs that something might be changing in the supply-demand dynamics of that market is a positive for Europe. In the commodity complex outside of the precious metals, the oil price was rather firm at the beginning of this week, but it's finishing out the week at the West Texas Intermediate. It's down $3. That's down to 79, so below the $80 level. Brent crude isn't down quite as much, but when one looks at the chart, what we see is that there is a medium-term progression of lower rally highs. Oil has held on to the majority of its gains, Brent crude has at least. It's still above $100. What's a little bit different this time is that on previous occasions, when it's come right down to that $100 level, it's bounced emphatically. There's been tails on the candles, then it has punched right back up off that level. Not so much this time. It went down to, I think, $103 or $104 late last week or early this week. It bounced somewhat, but it has given up the entire advance and is pushing back down towards the lows in here. This is not strong action from Brent crude right now. It's looking increasingly likely that it is going to fall below the $100 level and potentially extend the decline beyond that. So that is also another potential catalyst that we've been waiting for. Oil prices have been far too high. And that very high cost of energy is a tax on consumption. Elsewhere in the commodity complex, wheat, corn, and soybeans were all down in a dynamic fashion in here today. Corn was limit down. Wheat was down 45. Soybeans was down 51. Soybeans, in particular, offers a very good example of a failed upside break. It pushed up out of the almost 1 year trading range. It broke an incremental progression of lower rally highs. It couldn't sustain the break at all, pulled back emphatically back into the range, went right down, tested the lower side, didn't stop there, and it's broken down. This is bearish action. And there's a great deal of commonality now between wheat, corn, and soybeans. So it looks like we are going to see lower grain and bean prices. Rough rice has pulled back, not in the same dynamic fashion as those other staple foods, but it has pulled back enough to begin to question the consistency of its medium-term advance. It will need to find support rather quickly if the medium-term uptrend is to be given the benefit of the doubt. So oil looks like it's going to pull back, and the grain and beans look like they're beginning to pull back. Copper has also bounced above the $3 level in the last couple of weeks. It's given up almost the entire bounce. It's back to $3.13 and a half, and that is also a rather weak bounce following another breakdown from a large overhead type 3 top formation. The US dollar was somewhat weaker in the early part of the week, but has rallied rather emphatically into the end of trading in here today. It's almost 2 cents stronger against the euro. It's almost a cent stronger against the Australian dollar. It's stronger against the Canadian dollar than it has been at any time in the last year. The dollar index, what we did see in the early part of the week was the dollar unwinding a short-term overbought condition that had developed. It had rallied so emphatically over the last couple of weeks that it had become overbought against a whole slew of currencies. Today's upward dynamic suggests that the wind is in its sails, that people are willing to buy the pullbacks in the US dollar right now. The dollar is rallying from a very low level, and it's rallying for a whole number of reasons. Some people will be buying it because it offers liquidity in a highly uncertain environment, so they're buying it for as a safe haven. Other people are buying it because the USA doesn't look nearly as threatening an environment or place into to keep money compared to Europe at present. So, and that is also one of the reasons that the US that the Japanese yen is it has been really quite firm in here. Even today, though, the US dollar was a bit stronger than the yen, and that dollar yen rate is up to 77 right now. The Japanese have been defending the 76 area. 76 has been an area of resistance for the yen against the dollar on a number of occasions this year. They haven't come out and said they're going to defend that level, but the dollar has found support on a number of occasions close to there. The chances are that they will intervene. They've talked about intervening every time it gets down to that around that area. The chances are that they will intervene if it does break below that 76 area. So from the perspective of risk reward, where the dollar is at the moment against the yen doesn't look like a high risk trade at present. It does look like the dollar is going to get stronger against a large number of currencies and potentially even against the yen. The majority of people are worried about Europe at present. And Europe has certainly been garnering headlines. People have become very polarized in their views. Some people think that the euro is going to pull through. Other people have become incredibly apocalyptic. I've seen some of the most bearish commentary I've ever seen in the last week. I tend to look at that and think that it's usually emotions have got the better of people when they start to write that type of commentary. To the extent that it's helpful at all, it does help to give a bit of an impetus to politicians to toe the line. The fact that Germany passed the EFSF deal, as was expected yesterday, was a plus in terms of the European crisis generally. People are asking whether Greece is going to default on its debt. I think it is worth remembering that Greece has already defaulted on its debt. The Eurozone and the ECB pressured the ISDA to rule that it was a technical default rather than an outright default. So Greece was given more time. And time is something that Greece has been lent on a number of occasions. The fact that the likelihood is that the EFSF deal is going to get passed, that will allow this new authority to participate in the secondary market. They're going to be able to take over from the ECB in terms of bond buying. They're not going to have the reporting route that the ECB has to follow. So that's going to become a lot easier. When we look at the spread charts, particularly for Greece, which now has a lower rally high, but also for most other European sovereigns, then it does look like we've hit at least a near-term peak. It's potentially a medium-term peak. That would suggest that this portion of the crisis may be coming towards an end. But commodity prices have been high enough for long enough, and the euro hasn't been a particularly weak currency in here. The fact that you have an austerity drive in at least half of the continent, and potentially higher in, or higher taxes and lower spending by other governments to fuel the bailouts that we're having, suggests that growth is going to be slow in Europe for the foreseeable future. Germany's export economy has been remarkably impressive, but most of Germany's exports go to Europe. And with Europe slowing, that hasn't been particularly in favor of the German economy. Countries such as the UK, which are outside of the Eurozone and where the pound is well was sacrificed to the markets back in 2008. The UK got its devaluation in first. The pound right now has strengthened somewhat because on a relative basis, because it's not as affected as the European core. The UK is heavily Ireland is heavily indebted to the UK in terms of the loans that have been taken out here. But Ireland's spread has probably come down more than just about any of the other sovereigns on the periphery of Europe. So that in itself is probably a positive for the UK's banking sector. The UK, though, just like the rest of Europe, suffers from a very slow growth environment. Today's inflationary figures in Europe suggest that the ECB isn't going to be in a rush to cut interest rates. And at least that is at least part of the reason why stock markets sold off a bit in here today. Inflationary pressures in Europe remain elevated, and if we do get the commodities coming back down, then that should begin to feed into inflationary measures relatively soon. So in the next couple of quarters, we should start to see commodity prices starting to come down. We should start to see that being reflected in those inflationary measures. In the USA, everyone is concerned with the financial sector. The housing market continues to deteriorate. The US banking sector is the subject of litigation th because of various mortgages and the securitization of loans that wasn't done correctly. The economy remains in an extraordinarily slow growth environment. There is a great deal of speculation about whether the economy is already in a recession or not. The consumer is there's a record number of people unemployed, and the number of long-term unemployed has increased substantially. But the fact is that people buy the stock market, they're not buying the economy. There is a clear divergence between stocks that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer and those that are leveraged to the growth of the US consumer. The former are outperforming in emphatic style, whereas the latter are in remain within a bear market. Now, we've characterized Wall Street as being in a secular bear market for the since 2000. We've described that as a valuation contraction and with rising dividend yields. We stopped calling it a bear market because people were getting confused when the stock market was in a cyclical bull and going back up to test its highs. This has been a difficult decade for the USA. Corporate governance has improved to the extent that balance sheets are in really quite healthy condition. But governance at a national level needs to improve considerably. Now they say that cometh the hour, cometh the man. There hasn't been a great deal of evidence to date that strong leadership has appeared that can pull the economy out of its slump and can plot an innovative route for it out of this crisis. So that will take time. Credit bubble bursts take a considerable amount of time to work through. The USA remains in a slow growth environment. But the fact that the US dollar has rallying from a rather weak area is a positive for Wall Street generally. If one looks at the relative performance of various indices, the Dow Jones is down 5% on the year, whereas the FTSE is down 12.8% in US dollars and 13% in local currency, and the DAX is down 20% in either dollars or euros. So the USA has been a relative performer. If one wants to take a longer term view, the USA has got a lot going for it. There has been a revolution in terms of energy production. Shale oil and shale gas is a game changer for the energy sector. There are a number of companies currently building the facilities that will allow the USA to export gas for the first time. That's a major change. The Bakken Shale is producing massive amounts of oil on the US mainland. This is an incredible revolution in terms of oil production. The spread between Brent crude and West Texas Intermediate reflects the supply deficit of Brent, but reflects the supply surplus of West Texas Intermediate at the Cushing hub. It isn't such a fanciful projection to think that the USA could be energy independent in the next 10 to 15 years. So while we've had a very difficult decade for the last 10 years, and that this decade may not be much of a party either for the domestic economy, then provided governance improves, the energy situation isn't going to be it shouldn't be a headwind in the next 15 years. So that is a bullish potential outcome. When one looks back in history, there was a glass ceiling on the Dow Jones from 1964 all the way through to 1980. The S&P has been ranging for almost 10 years. We're in the middle of another corrective phase. There is the relative performance of the Dow and the S&P, and particularly the Nasdaq, has been really quite impressive. They could be among some of the first markets to demonstrate that support is beginning to be reasserted in here, or that they're finding that demand is being reasserted and they're finding support. So Wall Street is definitely worth watching in this type of environment, and the strength of the US dollar will make those markets more attractive in here over the medium term. Asia is home to some of the highest growth economies in the world. They have relatively low government, corporate, and personal debt. They're home to the largest populations, which for the first time in history, we're seeing literally billions of people being given the chance to improve their lifestyles through hard work. This is the greatest urbanization in history. High growth economies tend to have problems with inflation. A number of Asian economies have a large agrarian base, and food prices and energy prices make up a large proportion of their various inflationary measures. India and China, in particular, have been tightening over the last couple of years in an attempt to squeeze inflation out of the system. India has tightened to the extent that the spread between the 10-year and the 2-year, which we refer to as the yield curve spread, has contracted to zero, and it's begun to bounce from that area in here this week. China has a very similar story. It hasn't got quite down to zero, but the requirements that have been put on banks to raise reserves have been there, but have been put in place to avoid a problem with non-performing loans, or to cater for a problem with non-performing loans. I posted a very interesting email today from a Chinese subscriber who was describing how a number of factories have gone bust in Wenzhou because they were tapping private pools of capital, charging usurious rates for working cash flow. And their margins have compressed to an extent that their CEOs have either disappeared or committed suicide. Mrs. Tracy looked up a number of Chinese websites, and this process has been going on since April. There have been hundreds of factories have closed down because of this inability to raise capital. Now, they say that Warren Buffett has often said that you don't know who's been swimming naked until the tide goes out. And the tightening that we're getting in China, that's been going on in China for the last 2 years, is starting to have an effect. People are widely anticipating a peak in the housing market. Now, part of the reason that the Chinese government have been tightening so aggressively was deliberately to cool down the housing market. So, from their perspective, that's going to be viewed as a positive. If highly leveraged businesses are beginning to go out of business, that is reflective of tight monetary conditions. So, China is beginning to get some of the results that it wanted when it embarked on this tightening regime. And the stock market reflects that. The A-share market and the Chinese banking sector have been particularly weak. And the A-share market is right back down to last year's lows now. And a clear set of upward dynamics sustained for more than a couple of days will really be needed to suggest that demand is beginning to return in this area. China probably needs a catalyst in the form of looser monetary policy to really start to attract investors back into the equity markets. Valuations are at a level that have been attractive on previous occasions, but it probably does need a catalyst to get people back into it. And India is a relatively similar situation. Now, you had a similar type of a set of stories in India with a number of small farmers getting themselves into trouble with short-term loans and usurious rates, and also a high incidence of suicide in India. That also reflects tighter monetary conditions. The RBI has raised interest rates 12 times in the last 18 months. Interest rates are now pretty close to where they were back before the credit crisis in 2007 and 2008. They're attempting to squeeze inflation out of the system. Now, a lot of the inflation that you've had in India isn't particularly as a result of the interest rate cycle, but more because of supply side inefficiencies. There are a number of supply side bottlenecks in India that would need to be freed up, but could easily bring down the cost of particularly agricultural products. And that is at least part of the reason that they're going to, well, that they're talking about inviting some of the international retailers such as Carrefour and Tesco into the country because they want the supply chain mechanism put in place. Much of the rest of Asia had been a relative performer until relatively recently. Indonesia was a high-profile market where you have the combination of a massive commodity export market as well as a high-growth domestic economy. The stock market had held above its 200-day moving average, as had the Philippines and Thailand until relatively recently. They've all broken downwards around the same time that the Asian dollar index broke its progression of higher reaction lows and fell back below its 200-day moving average. Again, the strength of the US dollar in this case is suggestive of a flight to safety, rather than quality in this case, but that's certainly a flight to safety where people are beginning to take some money off the table. A further strengthening of the US dollar would be a headwind for some of those Asian markets, but this remains the center of global growth, whereas the environment is likely to be slow growth in Europe for quite a long time. And the USA is likely to be in a slow growth environment at least for the next few years. Asia has had a problem with inflation. It has been attempting to squeeze inflation out of the system. Once that job has been completed, then we are going to get a change in monetary policy. We're going to get a loosening of monetary policy. That should act as a catalyst to help spur demand once more from investors in this region. So the chances are that we're going to be presented with a favorable entry opportunity in a number of these Asian markets in the not too distant future. The greatest urbanization in history means that we're literally getting hundreds of millions of people being raised out of poverty and into the middle classes. The per capita consumption of just about everything is going upwards. That does not mean that commodity prices are always going to go upwards. They are volatile by practically by definition. These are comparatively thin markets, particularly compared to equity markets, and even more so compared to bond markets or currency markets. They are relatively easily manipulated. And right now we're seeing the strength of the US dollar is having an impact on the commodity complex generally. Grain and bean prices have fallen from rather elevated levels. Oil prices look like they are also falling from relatively elevated levels. This remains a secular bull market for a large number of commodities, but they are best bought following reactions. A mantra at Fuller Money over the last decade has been don't pay up for commodities. That's as true today as it was 10 years ago. So even though they are volatile, and just about everything has been volatile over the last 2 months, the commodities are worth keeping an eye on for when they become overextended to the downside. They're capable of rather large bounce backs because of the thinness of those respective markets. What is interesting in here is that as the grain and beans go down, the meats are starting to head higher. The feeder cattle and lean hogs are both pushing up out of relatively lengthy trading ranges in here. When we take a big step back and look at the long term, Asia remains the global growth center. Companies that are leveraged to the growth of the new middle class and the global consumer remain relative strength leaders. Now, leaders tend to lead for a reason, and the reason is reasonably clear. Whereas the rest of the world, Europe and the USA in particular, are in pretty low growth environments. The countries that are producing commodities to fuel the growth of Asia in particular have been doing reasonably well. At present, we're seeing commodity prices pulling back. That's been a headwind for the commodity producers, particularly in Latin America. Brazil had bounced back rather impressively from the lows that were posted in mid-August. It pushed right back up to test the 200-day moving average, and it has failed at that level. This is another market that looks like a completed Type 3 top, and now we're getting a distribution below the peak, and it's encountering resistance below the 200-day moving average, and the moving average has turned downward. So this is a medium-term downtrend. It's a pretty similar story for a number of the other Latin American markets. Commodity prices look like they're heading lower. We remain in a tight monetary policy area, or environment for the majority of Asia. When that begins to change, that could act as a catalyst to reignite investor interest in the commodity sector. But for the moment, it looks like the main commodities, the economically important commodities, look like they're going to head lower. That'll be a headwind for Latin America, but it will also set up the next buying opportunity in those markets. Latin America is likely to be highly leveraged to the performance of Asia's large markets. That has certainly been the case in the past, where Brazil has outperformed in emphatic fashion, while when Asia has also been going up. If we compare the dollar index, the Asian dollar index, and the Latin American dollar index, the dollar looks like it's getting stronger in here. In 2007, the Asian dollar index was a very good lead indicator for what happened in the Asian region. The Latin American dollar index did particularly badly during the financial crisis because it was so leveraged to the commodity complex, which got hit particularly hard when liquidity dried up. Investors have a great deal to worry about. The European crisis isn't about to go away. There is still potential that the Eurozone is going to be unable to avoid an unruly default in Greece. I personally don't believe that that is a high probability, but it remains a possibility at this point. As long as it remains a possibility, then investors are going to remain anxious about what happens in Europe. That's likely to remain a sword of Damocles above investor sentiment. And until we start to see that anxiety being removed, then this remains a rather difficult environment. The amount of volatility that we've had in the markets over the last couple of months is debilitating from the perspective of investor sentiment. People have decided to sit on the sidelines. They're waiting for a catalyst to get back in. Certainly, a reduction in volatility would help, but looser monetary conditions and an improving situation in Europe would certainly help along that line. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.